European elections are a reflection on national politics.
It's to some extent a tragic joke.
Well, the main takeaway is that more Europeans voted in this European election than back in 2014.
We go on, this vote is about Europe, to change banks, agriculture, borders. Nothing is going to change within the Italian government. I just hope that after the election, our relationship with the Five Star Movement will be less confrontational.
The French people have put the National Rallies list at the top of the elections. I see a victory for the people who, with pride and dignity, took back the power tonight.
The majorities have been tied. The question of what does the Brexit entail has been very unclear. So I think it's important that the people in Britain decide which way to go forward.
Never before in British politics has a new party launched just 6 weeks ago topped the polls in a national election. The reason, of course, is very obvious. We voted to leave in a referendum. We were supposed to do so on March the 29th, and we haven't.
The European Union held its parliamentary elections over the weekend, and the results were mixed as the continent struggles to define its future. Nationalist and populist parties strengthened their place in European politics, but didn't do as well as expected. Pro-Europe parties did rally their supporters, who've been quieter in recent years, but did not reach a clear victory. And the established traditional parties took a backseat to smaller groups on the right and on the left. The unifying factor was high turnout, which hit above 50% for the first time in more than 20 years. In the United Kingdom, the results were a little more clear. The newly formed Brexit Party got the most votes, which means the Brits are sending representatives to the EU who believe that the UK should not be a part of the Union. We're going to talk all about it. It's The Takeaway. I'm Tanzina Vega. Here to make sense of all these moving parts is Peter Hall, a professor of European Studies at Harvard University. Welcome to The Takeaway, Peter.
It's a pleasure to be here.
And also with us is Yasmin Sirhan, London-based staff writer at The Atlantic. Yasmin, great to have you with us.
Thanks for having me.
So, Yasmin, let's start with you. In the lead up to these elections, there were a lot of analysts who were predicting a surge in the far right and populist parties that did not seem to pan out. How well did far right groups do overall?
Yeah, it's true. There was a lot of hype in the lead up to this vote that effectively these populist far-right parties would continue the surge that we've seen in the last couple of years. Ultimately, some of them did do well. In France, Marine Le Pen's National Rally did come in first. In Italy, Salvini's League won. In Hungary, we saw Orban's party do well as well. But on the whole, as you said, we didn't see the surge that I think a lot of people were expecting. It was more like a fizzle. And even with the parties that did do well, like Le Pen's National Rally, she actually ended up losing some seats compared to the result that she had in the 2014 contest.
Peter, what about you? How do you view the far right performance, given all the rhetoric leading up to these elections?
Well, I think that's right. They didn't do as well as some were hoping and some were expecting. But I think the important message here is that rather than being a flash in the pan, they seem to be a grouping that's here to stay, at least for the foreseeable future. And of course, the other big news here was that the Green parties did very well in this election. And I think overall what we're seeing is confirmation of a long-term trend that the mainstream center-left, center-right parties that have dominated the European Parliament and also for the most part governed European nations over the past five decades, they're losing their grip on the electorate, and we're seeing a much more fragmented European electorate than we used to.
Yasmin, I'm wondering if you could comment on that, because I think that really what I'm taking away from this, and we'll talk more specifically as we go through the segment, is this it feels like the EU is having an identity crisis of sorts.
No, I think Peter's absolutely right. We did see, I think, in this election, kind of two visions for the European Union kind of go head to head. A vision led by Salvini and nationalist far-right parties that wants to see the EU be a bit less powerful, for more of the decision-making to go to the nation states, versus a different vision led by Macron and others that wants to see a stronger EU. And in the end, we didn't really see an outright winner. I think Peter's right in saying that we're seeing a more fragmented politics in Europe, a type of fragmentation that we've actually even seen on the national level. I mean, we've seen this in Germany, where, you know, the mainstream parties didn't perform as well. So I think it's kind of rippling across the continent, but we're just seeing it on a big level here.
And I'm wondering, Peter, how do we explain, to Yasmin's point, the sort of the underperformance of some of the more mainstream parties in Europe?
Well, I think we have to admit that there's a good deal of discontent. Now, the causes of that are variable across the continent. In the South, the experience of austerity in the wake of the euro crisis gave a real boost to populist parties on the left. In Northern Europe, and indeed parts of the South, Italy a good case in point, immigration is a central issue. People are feeling that they're not doing as well as they used to. Significant numbers of Europeans say that life is going to be worse for their children than it is for them. So in some ways, certainly the vote for the populist right is a broad protest vote. On the other hand, maybe more happily, the vote for the Greens is inspired in some measure by this upsurge of support for environmental causes, to some extent the result of the strikes on Friday that school children have been mounting in Europe. And so the mainstream parties are losing votes both on their right flank to the populist right and middle-class educated votes to the Greens.
Yasmin, we talked a little bit about the Green Party. I'm wondering, was there something specific in their message that resonated with Europeans?
Well, I was actually in Germany in the lead up to the European elections, and something that really stood out to me there was that the Green Party was really pushing more than just a climate argument, which obviously they're known for, but a pro-European argument. And we've seen that not just in Germany, but also in the UK, where the Greens performed quite well. So, I think they have a vision for Europe that is a stronger Europe, but also one that wants to tackle this issue. And so I think for voters looking for other parties, alternatives to the established ones, as Peter was just mentioning, that's kind of a positive message that hits two birds with one stone.
I want to get to the UK in a minute, but I do, Peter, want to ask you, given the fact that there wasn't a specific ideology that really won out in the weekend's elections, does that tell us anything about the future of the EU's identity going forward?
Well, of course, the EU has had a permanent identity crisis, and I don't think that's going to end anytime soon. But I think it's very important to note that even though the populist right did relatively well, the balance of power in the European Parliament is held by pro-European parties. The Greens are pro-European. They want to see a somewhat different Europe, but they're pro-European. The Liberals, who did relatively well, partly because Emmanuel Macron's in France joined that group, they can join together with the center-left and the center-right and generate a broadly pro-European consensus. It'll be more difficult to generate than it was before, but it's definitely possible. Although I think all politicians in Europe are taking pause, if you like, at this movement on their left and right flanks and wondering, well, how far should we move towards greater European integration?
And I'm wondering, Yasmin, if you could weigh in here as well. It almost feels like the things that we're talking about, the Green Party, immigration, populism, these are things that are coming up in our little country over here across the pond as well. Are there any similarities in what you're seeing across the pond to what's happening here in the United States?
I mean, it is kind of interesting because, I mean, obviously, you know, the U.S. has a two-party system that I think is kind of different from European politics in that way that it sometimes feels like there's less options. But I do think you're right in that the topics that are of interest to people are very much the same. What will be interesting to see is how American voters choose to voice their thoughts on these issues when it comes to the presidential election coming up. Perhaps instead of different parties, as the Europeans are turning to, perhaps they'll just turn to different types of candidates within the established parties themselves.
Peter, we've been sort of holding off on talking about the UK here, but the UK was also a big part of what happened over the weekend. What message did the British voters send in these elections?
Well, the main message they sent was one of unhappiness. They are very unhappy that Parliament hasn't been able to resolve the Brexit dilemma one way or another. Of course, there's variation in that unhappiness. I think this election confirmed that The British electorate is split right down the middle, essentially, between those who want to leave the European Union one way or another and those who want to remain. So this was a very sobering election for the two main parties, the Labour Party and the Conservative Party.
We also saw the news over the weekend, of course, that Prime Minister Theresa May was resigning. Yasmin, what does that mean for the UK and Brexit?
Essentially, I think the issue is that though Theresa May is stepping down, whoever her successor is going to face pretty much the same obstacles when it comes to the parliamentary division and deadlock that we've seen over the past few months and years. So whoever does end up taking her spot is going to be looking to these elections probably as a signal for where the country is and what sort of message they should be sending. And as Peter rightly mentioned, the result really told us what we already knew, that this country is very divided over the best way forward when it comes to Brexit. So ultimately, it will mean a new name at number 10. But I think the issues that they will face are going to remain pretty much the same.
And of course, we can't talk about this without talking about what all this means for us here in the United States. Peter, what do these elections signal for our relationship with the EU and vice versa?
Well, I think the success of the Greens and the populist right, at least limited success, is going to make relations with the U.S. a little bit more difficult. As you know, the Trump administration is in the midst of trying to negotiate a new trade agreement with Europe. That's on the back burner at the moment. China's on the front burner. But at some point, that will come back to the fore. And the Greens have been insisting and will continue to insist that any new trade agreements include significant measures on the environment, on climate change, on labor. The populist right, in turn, in Europe, are very keen on protecting European farmers, making sure that they face limited import competition. And of course, that's one of the central issues for the U.S. in these trade negotiations. So I think this is going to make the U.S. relations with Europe a little more difficult. And the other big issue for the U.S., I think, in Europe is Russia. Europe's on the front line vis-a-vis Russia, Ukraine, cybersecurity, and many, not all, but many of the populist right parties have been cozying up to Vladimir Putin. And that may make it a little more difficult for the EU in particular to take a strong line vis-a-vis Russia.
Peter Hall is a professor of European Studies at Harvard University, and Yasmin Sirhan is a staff writer at The Atlantic. We appreciate you both for being with us. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thanks so much.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, The New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.